ABC Radio.
You're listening to Nightlife.
Nightlife with Philip Clark.
I do want fame and plenty of it. So writes the determined and ambitious young novelist Ethel Turner in her diary. She was just 22 in 1893. 1 week before she sat down to pen the beloved debut novel Seven Little Australians, which so many of us have read. As we know, she achieved her goal with Seven Little Australians. It proved to be a breakthrough in Australian literature, and it set Ethel up on a path to becoming one of Australia's most prolific writers. She wrote no less than 44 novels over 34 years. And remarkably, since 1894, Seven Little Australians has never been out of print. And now, Ethel's life, full of ambition and aspiration, is on display for us to celebrate with a small collection of her private diaries and love letters, spanning 62 years acquired by the New South Wales State Library. To tell us about this intimate record of Ethel's musings on her latest writing projects, as well as her matter-of-fact way of expressing her innermost thoughts and feelings, I'm joined by Sarah Morley, New South Wales State Library Curator. Sarah, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us too. I mean, Ethel Turner's name's always associated with Seven Little Australians, despite the fact that she wrote many, many other books.
It is. I don't think people have a sense of the volume of the work that she
Astonishing
produced.
Number of books. Astonishing.
It is. It was one. She averaged one a year, sometimes more than one a year. I mean, that's incredible. It really is.
Mm. Did any of them have anything like the success of Seven Little Australians?
No. That was the peak. There were a few, the sequel, Family at Misrule, that went well. But nothing was as successful as Seven Little Australians. She did earn decent money from her
right.
books,
yeah.
Royalties over time.
What sort of things did she write? I mean, we know what Seven Little Australians is, family saga and so on, but yeah. what did she write in her genre or what
Look,
were they?
She always wrote for that sort of, I suppose, young adult. They would, I suppose, called juvenilia, or she wrote for youths, which I think frustrated her in some cases, but that was where her market was, or as the market that her publisher felt she was best at.
Mm.
She often used whatever was going on in her life or in society at the time for inspiration. So she wrote a book inspired by the Titanic going down.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then during World War One.
I was going to say, yeah, during the Great War. What did she write about
that?
Yeah,
she wrote a series of three books, The Cub, based on, you know, using the war for inspiration. And I suppose jumping on that bandwagon of people were wanting to hear good war stories. Mm. So she wrote about that. She also, when she travelled overseas, she wrote a book about travelling and ships and being in port. When she was working in her garden, she also wrote a book called The Ungardeners. It was very much what was going on was inspiring her, and she just used it all.
Mm. But as you say, they kept being published, so obviously the publisher was making something out of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think almost anything that Ethel Turner wrote, they were assured quality, and I think very early on in her career, people in the literary community identified her ability, and it was almost seeing her name was worthy. They knew it was going to be good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because, I mean, we only spend so much time talking about this because, that's right, all this great body of work over a whole lifetime, and yet people really only remember her for one thing. And
I know. Yeah. Look, I think when I've gone through the archive slowly, I confess I haven't read every single letter, but what struck me as extraordinary is the fact that she was not just an author of novels.
Mm.
She was a journalist and an incredibly accomplished journalist. She was editor of children's pages in various publications, but she also wrote over an extended period of time prose for magazines and newspapers. She wrote poetry, and she also wrote articles. She wrote a series on the impact of the war on women. She knew, I think, her responsibility and used the platform wisely. But, you know, during the war years, the amount of poetry of hers that was published meant that she was probably one of the best-known Australian writers of that period.
So she was, we could say, of course, she was a born writer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And for over 62 years, she kept a near-daily diary, which is a great discipline. Many of us at some stages in our life have thought, we'll do that, but we never do because it's hard. But she did, as I say, a born writer. Give us some examples of what she was writing about. What sort of things did she write about?
Look,
I went to the shops or
yeah, some of that, yeah. some banal. Look, she wrote about daily activities, what she was sewing, what she was reading, but also, of course, her writing projects, where she was at, what she was having difficulty with, when mm-hmm. she finished a book, when she walked up the street to post it, how many stamps it cost. Things like who she was corresponding with. It documents her relationships with various members of the literary community and the social scene, all the social events that she attended, all her community commitments, and then, of course, her innermost thoughts and feelings. We see her relationship with her future husband, Herbert Kerr Lewis, mm-hmm. unfold on the pages. So she's very very matter-of-fact in her writing, but there's so much there, and I was blown away at the research value. There are so many stories in this collection about her, about the various roles that she played in her life and that she excelled at.
Mm. We all love a love story, and you just mentioned it. The stop-start affair between Ethel Turner and her future husband, Judge Herbert Rayne Kerr Lewis. There was also apparently a secret engagement at one point.
Yes.
So he was the big love, was he?
I think he didn't start out as the big love.
Yeah.
She was obviously very driven and very focused on her writing, and he came into her life as a contributor to the Parthenon, which was the literary magazine that she put together with her sister. They were edited with Lillian for a short period of time. And he would contribute there, and there's accounts of her being frustrated with him. A lot of to-ing and fro-ing. She writes, I was horrid to him, and when he said he loved me, I told him I detested him with all my heart, and so I did. I don't like him an atom. So there's that aspect, but then, you know, not that that long, much later, she's saying in her diary, it has an unassuming little cross and a squiggle beside it. I'm frightened at what I've done and yet so happy. I never really thought I cared for him till tonight. And that is how she signified her secret engagement to him.
Wow.
So he was relentless in her pursual of her, and we have his love letters to her as the other side of her diary. So we see her feelings.
So what was it, a long relationship? Was it happy?
Yes, it was. It was. They were
they
together.
They stayed together, didn't they?
Yeah, they did for a very long time. And, you know, after he died, she wrote to her son Adrian, who was away at war. Let me find what she said. She said, never apart more than a few weeks, never more than the human inevitable frictions, and always coming together again, closer than ever. There was a lot of love there, and I think they really had a meeting of the minds. They were both writers, both very intelligent, and understood each other's roles and responsibilities and complemented one another.
Mm.
And that is evident, and you see their relationship developing throughout her diaries.
I'm talking with Sarah Morley, who's a curator of the New South Wales State Library, about their a delightful exhibition of the diaries and other documents from the life of Ethel Turner. Ethel Turner, of course, known by most, if you've heard of her at all, of course, as the author of Seven Little Australians. But she was a prolific writer, wrote many, many books and journalism and articles throughout her life, a born writer, had a tremendous work ethic, didn't she? Was she financially, look, we're talking at a time when it wasn't so easy for women to be independent. I mean, women had a life, but they was always with a man. And, you know, women making money on their own and being independent on their own was that's quite a different matter. Well, how was she placed with that? She must have made money from Little Australians, didn't she?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Look, this is what, again, I was amazed by. Well, when you think of the time, once women were married, you stopped working.
Yeah.
But Ethel didn't. And obviously she had the ability and was producing. You know, she was highly successful.
Mm.
So the first year out, she earned after, I guess we know all this, I should preface with she kept a fastidious record of all the money that she earned from her writing. Mm-hmm. And it's called her pen money book. And I think it's a play on the word pin money.
Yes.
So the pin money is obviously money that women, you know, little pocket money her husband would give a woman to go and spend on incidentals. So she called it her pen money book. And each year she tallied up and listed every single cent that she made from her writing. So in 1894, the year Seven Little Australians was published, she had listed an income of £159. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So for your listeners,
I mean, what's that in today's money?
Well, I guess rather than in today's money, at the time, if you think of a manager or a clerical assistant, a blue collar worker, the average wage, annual wage, would have been £300.
Okay,
so that was a man.
Yeah.
So then, the year later, she was earning £377. From her writing. So that's a combination of royalties as well as her freelance writing. But by 1923, she earned £1,543, which was just a bit more than her husband's judicial salary. So she was earning a comfortable salary from her writing.
Yeah. And she did this too. I mean, she wasn't exactly bucking the trend of what women had to be at that stage. I mean, she was a wife and mother too, wasn't she?
She was. And I think she was an exceptional woman because one expects certain things from a mother at that time, and she delivered all of that.
She had two children.
She had two children, Jean and Adrian. But she still managed to produce a novel each year that Jean and Adrian were born.
I know, think about that.
Oh. Look, she did found time to write, and I think it was probably part, as you said, it's part of her DNA. It was in her blood.
Mm.
And she might write till 1 a.m. in the morning or with help from her mother-in-law or her mother. They might take the kids, and she records in her diary, wrote for 11 hours straight with breaks for food and children.
Well,
but she was very disciplined in her writing.
And he, by the sound of it, was supportive of this too. So
yeah,
it had some modernity too about it, the relationship, you know, in as much as you can say that at the time.
No, absolutely you can say that. And she was, I don't want to, I guess I was shocked to hear how physically active she was. So there's that, I guess, a stereotype. If someone's literary and a writer, then they're not necessarily a physically active person. But Ethel went roller skating and played tennis and played golf. And she later in life would go body surfing daily.
Oh, really?
Okay. She learnt to ride a bike. Her husband, Herbert, taught her to ride a bike on Spit Road in Mossman. So obviously there wasn't the traffic then as there is now. But she wasn't afraid to get out and have a go, which, you know, where she found the time, I have no idea.
Mm.
But she lived life to the fullest.
Mm. What did the children do, by the way? Did they follow in their parents' footsteps?
Yes, I think you could say so. So Jean was a successful writer. She wrote four novels.
Mm.
Unfortunately, her life was cut short and she died in her early 30s of tuberculosis, but she was a budding writer. She wrote a very different story to her mother. She wrote more of an adventure story, but she was published by Ethel and Lillian's publisher, Ward Lock and Bowden. And she also had a regular gig with the Home magazine. She did the children's pages there, but also wrote articles. So she was well on her way to be following in her mother's footsteps.
Oh, okay.
Adrian became a district court judge.
Like his father.
Like his father, exactly. Mm. But I think what's interesting, he was also had elements of his mother's character as well, because he was very civic-minded and he was member of all sorts of societies, and he was in on various committees, the Surf Life Saving Association Committee. He was president, the National Fitness Council. He was the National Coordinator of the Duke of Edinburgh Award. He was on the Red Cross Appeals Committee. So he was very much like Ethel in that respect, because she always found time for I guess, her social responsibilities and her, to be a good citizen. So, I think their children followed respectively.
When did she die?
She died in 1958. So the diaries end, the last diary that she kept was in 1951, and she died 7 years later at the age of 88.
Well, keeping a diary to the end or not?
No. So 7 years she stopped at age 81.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the last entry in her diary, she says it's something to do with don't forget to take the book prizes to Hornsby Girls High. So she had a regular ritual that she would often attend: the Sydney Girls High Speech Day and the Hornsby Girls High Speech Day. She, of course, attended Sydney Girls High, and she would often present her own books as the prizes. So it's a lovely tradition. It's interesting that that's the last thing she wrote in her diary in 1951.
How about it? All right. So all this is, anyway, go and have a look for yourself. The you can look at some of these diaries and diary entries for yourself and reflect on the life of Ethel Turner, a remarkably successful and modern woman in many ways. Sarah, it's been terrific to talk. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.